Support comes from St. Louis Public Library Foundation, helping the library serve children and their families with programs and services needed to become lifelong readers. More information about the foundation is at slpl.org.
This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. According to a 2023 report from GoDaddy Venture Forward, Black women make up the fastest growing group of entrepreneurs in America. They make up 10% of the total number of entrepreneurs surveyed in 2019, which constitutes a 70% increase in the number of Black women-owned businesses since pre-pandemic times. That's a statistic worth celebrating, right? Well, research shows that Black women are turning to entrepreneurship to escape racialized and gendered workplace toxicity. Those challenges have mental, emotional, and physical health effects, and in the aggregate, compel Black women to leave the traditional workforce altogether to make a living as their own bosses. Jennifer Drake is the founder of Drake Strategy Partners. She's also the organizer of an upcoming event focused on providing Black women with skills to help them do more than just survive toxic work conditions, but to address them and thrive. Jennifer, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
So Jennifer, you're organizing the Black Women at Work event at .zac on October 3rd. But your dedication to Black women in the workforce shows up throughout your work, along with the fact that you are yourself a Black woman who works. So your work to make things better, I mean, what was the impetus specifically for Black women at work? I mean, was it maybe something that happened to you personally or stories that you've heard from others?
Sure, Elaine. Yes, I'm very excited about the event on October 2nd. And really, the impetus for this event has been growing for a number of years. I've been fortunate to do a lot of projects where I get to get out in the world and talk to people about what's happening with them, how they make decisions about their economic lives. And in particular, a couple of threads have stood out to me over time in recent years. The first is that as people make decisions about their economic lives, whether that's about what jobs to take or how much money they want to make, those decisions are much more complicated than simply taking the job that pays them the most. So there may be circumstances in their lives that they're trying to navigate, such as caring for young children, caring for older adults in their lives. And so the best job might be the one that pays a little less, but lets me be home in time for my kids to get out of school. Mm-hmm. And the other thing that we heard from a lot of Black women was that the best job for them was actually the one that gave them peace of mind. And in some cases, it required them to leave the workforce altogether. I don't think that most of us who grow up to be entrepreneurs as Black women, and this has certainly been borne out in the conversations that I've been having, are realizing some dream that we've had since we were little girls to, you know, own a business and be the next whoever it is. Mm-hmm. I really think that what we're doing is reaching for the most psychologically safe workplace, the workplace where we can be rewarded for our contributions and we get to be ourselves. And sometimes we have to leave the workforce altogether in order to do that.
When you say psychologically safe, can you give us an illustration of a situation wherein there is not psychological safety?
Sure. So psychologically safe workplaces, in the particular context of the Black women that I've spoken to, and certainly the ones that have responded in some of the qualitative research that you mentioned earlier in your introduction, are places where racial discrimination and bias, or gender discrimination and bias, exist just like they do in other places, but there's a system in place to respond to what people are experiencing. Mm-hmm. So put another way, racism, sexism, misogyny, those things are, right? We live in a society where those systems exert pressure on us all the time. But what I think is true is that our workplaces have a responsibility to ensure that those systems don't destroy us. Mm-hmm. They have a responsibility to ensure that we can do our best work whether those things are exerting pressure, and they have a responsibility to sort of counteract those things for us.
And that can manifest in things like dress codes, in the things that seem very everyday, but have a way of chipping away over time?
It's true. You know, I don't think there's some archetypal bad guy who exists to, you know, make work unbearable for Black women. Mm-hmm. And many of us, myself included, are very lucky to have really good bosses who care about these things.
Right.
But what I do believe is that most of the institutions in which we engage in employment, we enter into these transactional relationships to, you know, perform a particular service for wages, were created without having to account for the fact that we would ever be there in the first place. Mm-hmm. So if you think about some of our institutions around St. Louis that predate things like desegregation, right? And so if I am designing a system that provides a service or a response to a public need, provides a public good, and there's a very specific type of person who works there, then my ideas about the type of performance that gets rewarded and the type of performance that I maybe look at and say, I need to do some correction on that, don't take into account the realities of Black women. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a real challenge, but it's not one that we can't correct for.
Right. So with your work in founding and running Drake Strategy Partners, what is the biggest challenge that organizations you work with who've said, all right, let's do something about some of these conditions that are unhealthy for Black women in particular? What is the biggest challenge for them as they evolve to become more equitable and welcoming work environments, again, specifically for Black women?
You know, the challenges are myriad, I will say. What I think is a big sort of first step in the work that I do with organizations is getting clear about the fact that we are indicting systems and not necessarily people, mm-hmm. right? So there's a way in which we can look at our organizations, we can look at our companies, and really try to understand everyone there as a rational actor, right? Everybody comes to work, they want to do a good job, they want to be celebrated for their contributions, and they really want people to like them. You know, mm-hmm. nobody wants to be the boss where, you know, your employees go home and they feel bad about the interactions that they've had with you. And so I think a relentless focus on the systems and how we set up these organizations to work rather than sort of indicting personal behavior can be really important. But I would say one of the ways maybe people are surprised about the way that I do my work. I'm an organizational development consultant, right? I don't call mm-hmm. myself a DEI consultant, okay. but I have a lot of interest in building equitable workplaces. Mm-hmm. So your equity work might actually look like, how good are you at managing conflict? What does it look like when you bring in a diverse set of employees that have different ways of thinking, different ways of communicating, different ways of working themselves through problems that maybe seems a little bit transgressive as compared to the way that you've always solved problems?
Right.
And what would it look like to be a leader that has not only a tolerance for the sort of transgressive nature of working or the conflict that can result from just trying to do things differently, but what would it look like to embrace and celebrate the fact that there are some people who are bringing these new ways of doing work to our organizations and that, frankly, our organizations are better for their being there.
Mm-hmm. In some of the language we've used to promote this conversation and describe what's happening at Women at Work, we have talked about corporate bodies, but are nonprofits any better at doing this work? I mean, particularly given the local context, there are a lot of nonprofits here.
Mm-hmm. And I laugh because I spend most of my time in the nonprofit sector. So I don't necessarily think that organizations are better or worse than others, but I do rely on theory to sort of understand why organizations are the way they are. So mm-hmm. we know a lot about how institutions behave. And there's a theory that the institutions that are the largest and have the most influence and have the most resources sort of shape the way that other institutions act, mm-hmm. right? So if you think about the United Way in St. Louis, for example, we all want to be able to check all the United Way's boxes. And I know that's sort of an oversimplification of what they do.
Right.
But if we know that the reward system is set up in such a way that organizations that look a particular way do these things, then my goodness, I want to look like those organizations. And so I think what we see in the nonprofit sector is often a replication of the dynamics that plague corporations, Fortune 500 companies, and things like that, because frankly, we all get the message that that's what success looks like. This is what it looks like to run a good business. And unfortunately, you know, what I think is good about the nonprofit sector is that we have this interest in the human experience sometimes in our work that makes it a little easier to center it. But I don't think it makes it necessarily easier to address these issues because, frankly, they're not always rewarded. Addressing these things and getting better at the challenges that can make things difficult for Black women isn't often a priority. We don't make money from it.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking with Jennifer Drake, who's the organizer of Black Women at Work and the founder of Drake Strategy Partners. So Black women leaving the workforce, one of the ways Black women experience differential treatment is in compensation, right? What goes into the bank account. And that wage gap exists even for Black women who have college degrees. Now, for those who leave the workforce for entrepreneurism, you know, sort of with this shine on it, I mean, starting a business requires a great deal of capital and labor, and getting to, quote, success, it takes time and it often is not guaranteed. So, Jennifer, what do we know about what's at stake for Black women? We know what is at stake, that is, for Black women. But what are the stakes for everyone?
You know, just to talk numbers a little bit. So Black women-owned businesses are growing. They're also the least likely. Black women are the group that's the least likely to be running a mature business, so a business that is 5 years old or more. Mm-hmm. Only about 3% of all mature businesses are run by Black women. And once Black women are running businesses, there tend to be really stark differences in the amount of revenue that they generate. So on average, Black women-owned businesses are making about $24,000 in revenue as compared to $125,000 for all women. So certainly people are seeing entrepreneurship as a strategy for managing some of the distress that they're experiencing in their workplaces, but it is by no means a panacea. And this sort of industry or sector also is not immune to some of these greater racialized and gender dynamics that we see affecting all businesses. So they have much less capital. They're less likely to get loans, all those things that we know. But I think the bigger picture about what's at stake, and I think this really to put a fine point on what people are experiencing, Black women are saying to us that I would rather be a healthy person than a person who's unhealthy with a stable income. Mm-hmm. So I'm making this economically riskier choice. What does that mean for everyone? You know, 4 in 5 Black mothers are breadwinners. And, you know, we're either making most of the money or a quarter or co-breadwinning with our partners.
Right.
And so when you have Black women making these choices that are economically riskier, you have less stable families, children who are at economic risk. And, you know, I spend my time talking to the organizations that work on all of these sort of intractable issues that have to do with sort of social change and poverty and things like that. But what's at stake is really sort of the fabric of our society. Do we want to be a place not only where people can engage in the system of work in ways that with dignity and in ways that make them proud. But do we want to be a place where people can say, you know, I didn't have to make a choice that put my children at economic risk just to keep myself safe?
Right. Now, for those who are listening in, Jennifer, who are not Black women, but may have Black women who work alongside them or report to them. You know, earlier you had talked about bosses, you know, individuals, then there's the institution level. But for someone who is in a position to make some kind of positive difference, what are some concrete, you know, actionable steps that folks can take, you know, without sort of looking at change at strategic organizational level that can help make the workplace culture healthier and more welcoming to their Black women colleagues?
Yeah. Culture is what we do. Culture is what we see. Do people have their doors open, right? Where do people eat lunch? Do people go out to lunch? What do people wear at work? And it's also the things that are very tangible, like our policies and procedures. And so when I engage in organizational development work, often what I'm telling people is, tell me about your culture. Tell me about what's on paper. Tell me about the spoken and unspoken rules that are sort of governing what you do around here. And then tell me how people are experiencing those spoken or unspoken rules. So do people have access to the same things, and can they sort of move about freely in the workplace in the same ways? And often what we're hearing is that that's not true for Black women. We cannot do that. Mm-hmm. But some of the things that I'll spend my time on, again, are communication and feedback, right? Like, how are we articulating what we need our employees to do? And how are we articulating the standard to which we expect them to perform? Are we being clear about how we hold people to those standards, when they meet them, when they don't meet them. And so I spend a lot of time just helping organizations consider how to be with one another. Mm-hmm. And what's true about that work, I think, is that it's helpful to everyone inside organizations. Mm-hmm. You know, we often hear people say, if you can make life better for Black women, you can make it better for everyone. And I certainly think that's true about our workplaces.
Right. So the event that you're organizing, Jennifer, and moderating is Black Women at Work, and it is meant to be an opportunity for Black women professionals to meet and learn from one another, not to commiserate on their jobs, although I'm sure there's some of that happening, but a focus on the positive and what can be changed. What is it that attendees can expect?
You know, this space is intended for Black women to gather. Certainly, we're going to do a lot of high-fiving and hugging and probably some of that commiseration. But I think what is unique about this space is that our starting point is that we know your story. And we know it's happening to you because we really understand your experiences from a systemic level. And the systems that are exerting pressure on you are the ones that exist inside these racialized and gendered workplaces. And frankly, my story is your story. So the things that I'm experiencing, you probably have experienced as well. So if the starting point is that, and not necessarily, well, tell me what happened to you so I can decide if I believe it, then we can spend most of our time gaining insight about these dynamics, figuring out how to be a surgical as we can about navigating the dynamics, so really sharing our strategies and resources that are helping us. And then what I hope, is that this becomes a place where a community where there's a platform for sharing between Black women. But also, I think we have to get to a point where we can hold employers accountable as well. So what could this community of Black women mean for employers who engaged with us? And we're hearing directly from Black women saying, this is what would make life better for me at work. And what would it look like for them to say, I'm really open to that and I want to learn more. Mm-hmm. So that's what we're looking forward to in the future, starting with this event on October 2nd.
So in the last minute, what is the picture that you see in your mind of what it looks like once the event is done? What is the image, the takeaway?
The image is Black women feeling like a world in which they can make choices about their careers and not have to sacrifice their health or their livelihood in any way to do that is possible. It doesn't ruin them financially, right? And that they can make those choices of their own volition in the same way that other groups can. You know, I think it also looks like employers interrogating their practices and saying, wow, if all Black women that we've spoken to at this event sort of have the same story, how does that make us responsible for coming up with new strategies to make our workplaces more supportive and affirmative places for Black women?
Sounds like a kind of postcard.
Let's draw it.
Yeah. Jennifer Drake is the founder of Drake Strategy Partners. Jennifer, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
This episode was produced by Maya Norfleet.
Our audio engineer is Aaron Dorr. This podcast was mixed and edited by Aaron.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thank you.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri St. Louis.
The Gateway brings you the day's news each weekday from around the St. Louis region and the state capitals in Jefferson City.
Our schools are accredited. We don't need this bill.
And Springfield.
How many more years must pass before lawmakers see time is of the essence?
I'm Abby Larico. Join me each weekday for The Gateway on the STLPR app or wherever you get podcasts.